Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Monday, the 28th of June, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 41 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality, and we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to talk a bit about the purpose of critical thinking and the purpose of Reality Check. Then, following that, we're going to introduce a brand new semi-regular segment of the show, our celebrity interview. And the celebrity to be interviewed tonight is the Premier of Queensland, Anna Bligh, on the issue of swearing. Then, in our movie review, we'll have a look at the new Australian film set in the crime underworld of Melbourne, Animal Kingdom. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, just before we get into today's LGBT news roundup, I'd like to thank Sonia and Robert for hosting last week's show. They had a very interesting discussion about Sharia law, shark cartilage, and heaps of other fascinating topics. So thank you very much, guys. Now, let's get into our LGBT news roundup for the last couple of weeks or so. And we actually have a lot of news to get through today. And the first thing to note is that today is June 28th. So that means it is exactly 41 years to the day since the start of the Stonewall riots in New York City, the event that marks the beginning of the modern LGBT rights movement. And because of the importance of this date, most of the older, well-established LGBT pride marches in the Northern Hemisphere all take place during the last weekend of June to commemorate the Stonewall riots, basically. So that means that this weekend just passed saw massive pride marches take place in scores of major cities around the world. The main ones in North America were New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, Houston, Seattle, and Mexico City. In Europe, they took place in Paris, Barcelona, Lisbon, Oslo, Dublin, and Edinburgh, as well as Ljubljana in Slovenia and Istanbul in Turkey, to mention but a few. In South America, marches were held in Caracas, Venezuela, Bogota, Colombia, Quito, Ecuador, and La Paz, Bolivia. And in Asia, I believe that a number of parades were planned to take place across India on the weekend, but I haven't been able to read any reports of that yet. But anyway, that long list I just read out was only the parades this past weekend. And only the ones in the main cities. Parades also took place in many other regional cities, and many other parades have been taking place over the last few weeks, and many others will take place in the coming weeks. The phenomenon of the LGBT Pride Parade has really become almost universal now, and that's something that's really only happened over the last 10 or 20 years or so. And the vast majority of those marches and parades take place at this time of year, late June or early July. Now, among the most significant Pride events held over the last couple of weeks were the Pride marches held in Zagreb, Croatia, and Sofia, Bulgaria. Pride marches in the Balkans region are generally few and far between, and also generally quite risky events. But Zagreb Pride is actually now in its 9th year running, and Sofia Pride in its 3rd year. This year, about 300 people marched in Zagreb and about 700 in Sofia. And, as usual in Eastern Europe, they both took place under heavy police guard, and there were the usual 100 or so right-wing homophobic counter-protesters at both events. I read that there were some scuffles, but no one was seriously injured at either event, fortunately. Now, also significant was the fact that San Francisco this year celebrated the 40th anniversary of its Pride Parade, the first one taking place back in 1970, just 1 year after the Stonewall riots. The only thing that marred the San Francisco Pride events this year, though, was a shooting that occurred at a street party in Castro Street on Saturday night. A 19-year-old man was killed and two other people were injured. But apparently it was the result of a personal dispute between the victim and some other men and was not a hate crime, and they were not in fact members of the LGBT community. They just happened to be in Castro Street, it seems. Still, a not very pleasant way to get the Pride festivities underway. Now, the one significant place where a Pride march didn't take place this past weekend was St. Petersburg in Russia. They had planned to hold the first ever St. Petersburg Pride March on Saturday, June 26th, but as always in Russia, the permission to hold the event was denied a few days before it was due to take place. About 30 activists went along to the front of the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg anyway, and managed to hold a very brief Pride march. They unfurled their banners and flags and got to march about 100 metres before, unfortunately, the police moved in, dispersed the crowd, and arrested 6 people and took them off in their police vans. So, once again, Russia proves itself to be a very unfriendly place for LGBT people and LGBT rights, unfortunately. In other news this evening that doesn't involve Pride marches, well, we reported here on Reality Check 2 weeks ago that Iceland's parliament had unanimously passed a same-sex marriage law. Well, that law came into effect yesterday, Sunday, June 27th, and the first civil same-sex marriages in the history of Iceland took place yesterday. And believe it or not, one of the first people to get married to her partner under the new law was Iceland's Prime Minister herself, Jóhanna Sigurðardóttir. So, very exciting news there from Iceland, which now goes down in history as the 9th country in the world to open up civil marriage to same-sex couples. So, good news there from Iceland, but not so good news from Strasbourg in France, where the European Court of Human Rights is located. You see, the court handed down a judgment last Thursday, June 24th, finding that there is no obligation on European countries to open up marriage to same-sex couples. Now, just to give you a bit of background, this was the case of Schalk and Kopf versus Austria. Mr. Schalk and Mr. Kopf are a couple, and in 2002 they applied for a marriage license in Austria and were refused, as Austria doesn't allow same-sex marriage. So they took their case to the European Court of Human Rights, arguing that denying them the right to marry was a violation by Austria of the European Convention on Human Rights. The court, however, found that Austria had not violated the convention, had not breached the men's human rights, and had no obligation to introduce same-sex marriage. In other words, countries in Europe can introduce same-sex marriage if they want to, but are not obliged to. So, this is a bit disappointing, but I have to say, hardly a surprise. Because remember that the European Court of Human Rights is a court of the Council of Europe, not of the European Union. And the Council of Europe is a much bigger organisation than the EU. The EU has 27 members, whereas the Council of Europe has 47 members, including countries like Serbia, the Ukraine, Azerbaijan, Turkey and Russia. So, effectively, if the court had decided that there was an obligation on member states to introduce same-sex marriage, then all member countries would have been obliged to comply, including Turkey and Russia, for example. And I just don't think the court was ready to make that kind of highly controversial decision. They did mention, though, that there has been a rapidly developing tendency among European states over the last 10 years or so to legally recognise same-sex couples. But there is, as yet, no consensus on the issue. So I suspect that it's going to take a lot more European countries to introduce same-sex marriage before the court finally recognises it as a human right and obliges the last remaining countries to introduce it as well. Now, it's interesting to reflect on the similarities between the Council of Europe and the United States when it comes to same-sex marriage. The Council of Europe has 47 members, 7 of which have now introduced same-sex marriage. The United States has 50 states, 5 of which have now introduced same-sex marriage, plus the District of Columbia. So it will be very interesting to follow how this process of legal reform pans out in both regions of the world. And talking about the United States, let's head now to California, where a case is underway that may soon put the US Supreme Court in a very similar situation to the one the European Court of Human Rights was in last week with the Schalk and Kopfer case. That is, being forced to decide whether now is the time to extend same-sex marriage to the entire country or not. And of course, the case most likely to do that in the US is the Perry versus Schwarzenegger case, currently before a single judge in a federal court in California. Now, this is the case that we've been following here on Reality Check since it began back in January. There's been a long hiatus in proceedings while some legal wrangling went on, but it's now up and running again, and in fact, the closing arguments finally took place a couple of weeks ago on Wednesday, June 16th. All that's left now is for the judge to make his decision, and that's expected sometime in the next few weeks. This is a case specifically about the constitutionality of the Proposition 8 referendum in California in 2008 that took away the right to same-sex marriage in that state. And effectively, it could turn out to be a case that decides whether all states of the US are constitutionally obliged to open civil marriage to same-sex couples. Whatever the judge decides in the next few weeks, this case will be appealed to the Federal Court of Appeals, and then from there, most likely, will head to the US Supreme Court, which will then be forced to make a very historic decision, whichever way it decides. Let's hope that when the time comes, the US court doesn't follow the European court's example of last week. But anyway, that day is still probably a couple of years away, I suspect. And as always, dear listener, we will, of course, keep you informed of all developments here on Reality Check. And finally, briefly, let's revive our Argentina Watch segment this week, because there's good news to report from Argentina. And that is that just last Friday, June 25th, the 7th same-sex marriage in the history of the country took place. Two women, Veronica Decio and Carolina Perez, tied the knot in the city of La Plata, just outside Buenos Aires, after a judge ordered the registry office there to marry them. Meanwhile, the Argentinian Senate continues to analyze the marriage equality bill and will finally vote on it on July 14th. The pundits are saying that its chances of being approved are looking pretty good. Let's hope they're right. We'll know in about 2.5 weeks from today. Okay, let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll take a moment to reflect on the purpose of Reality Check, and indeed the purpose of promoting critical thinking. And then we'll hear our very special new segment of the show, our celebrity interview, this week with Queensland Premier Anna Bligh, on the issue of swearing. So to find out what she has to say, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Made in Melbourne for the world. Joy 94.9.
Cruising for joy?
It's safe listening. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Fight for This Love by Cheryl Cole. And that's something we have to do every single day. Fight for our love and fight for our right to love who we choose. Because homophobia is everywhere, unfortunately. We now move into the part of the show where we normally undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. But tonight, things are going to be a little bit different from normal. Partly that's because we have our new segment coming up shortly. That's our celebrity interview with Anna Bligh coming up in a few minutes. But also it's because I had been intending to bring you a report this evening from the Mind Body Spirit Festival held in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago, including snippets of interviews from some of the stall holders. But unfortunately we've been having some computer maintenance going on here at Joy, and that meant I wasn't able to get access to the files to edit them. But anyway, not to worry, you'll get to hear about the Mind Body Spirit Festival next week, and tonight, instead, I thought I'd take the opportunity to talk a little bit about the purpose of Reality Check, and really, of pretty much all skeptical organizations in general. But just quickly before I do that, and speaking of skeptical organizations, I should let you know that tickets are now on sale for TAM Australia. Now, if you haven't heard of TAM, well, TAM stands for The Amazing Meeting. And it's a massive skeptical conference run by the James Randi Educational Foundation that's been held every year for the last 8 years in Las Vegas in the US. And this year, for the first time, they're going to hold a version of The Amazing Meeting here in Australia. So that's TAM Australia. And it will be held in Sydney from November 26th to the 28th. So if you're interested in attending a very exciting skeptical event and meeting skeptics from all over the world, do try to head to Sydney in November. To register for the conference, you need to visit tamaustralia.org. And there, just follow the instructions. And actually, I should mention that this week, registration is only open to members of the Australian Skeptics or subscribers to their magazine. But if you're not one of those, you can start registering from next Monday, July the 5th. So that's, again, the website is tamaustralia.org. Now, it should be a really fun and enlightening event. I'm definitely going to be there, and there are going to be a lot of skeptical podcast stars there as well, including the entire Skeptics Guide to the Universe team, plus most of the Skeptic Zone team, plus DJ Grothy, plus Brian Dunning, plus Simon Singh, and even James Randi himself, and many, many more. So definitely an event to mark on the calendar if you haven't already done so. Now, before we have a listen to our new celebrity interview segment coming up, I wanted to take this opportunity to clarify to the Reality Check listeners what this show is all about. That is, to talk about what we really try to do here on Reality Check, and what other skeptical organizations around the world are also trying to do. Because we do receive a fair bit of feedback here at Reality Check, and some of that feedback indicates to me that not everyone really understands the purpose of this show. So let me be absolutely clear. The purpose of this show is not to tell you what to believe. The purpose of this show is to try to teach you how to think critically. So the purpose of this show is not to tell you that echinacea doesn't work or homeopathy doesn't work or that there's no such thing as psychic powers or whatever. The purpose of this show is to equip you, the listener, with the self-defense skills of critical thinking. So this show is made with your interests in mind. Our sole purpose is to help you learn the art of critical thinking so that when you hear extraordinary or dubious claims out there in the world, you don't simply accept them at face value. You question them. You ask for the evidence. You investigate the evidence. So you don't fall for all those charlatans and con artists and tricksters out there who are trying to fleece you of your hard-earned cash, possibly at the cost of your health and even your life. Now, that is our sole purpose here at Reality Check. So when I say that echinacea doesn't work, I don't want you to believe me just like that. Echinacea doesn't work because Tony Pittman says it doesn't work. I want you to listen to my reasoning as to why I think it doesn't work, and assess for yourself if my reasoning is good or not. And when I say that I don't want to tell people what to believe, I really do mean it, because I really don't care what people believe, I care about how they think. Now let me explain why. The first reason is this. If today I do an analysis of the claims made about echinacea and conclude that it doesn't work, well, that's okay, you've heard my opinion. But when you go out into the world, you probably won't be confronted by claims about echinacea. There'll be claims about something else, some other product that neither you nor I have ever heard of. Wongo berries, let's say. And someone will tell you that wongo berries are amazing at curing arthritis or acne or whatever. Now, I don't want you to say, well, Tony Pittman said that echinacea doesn't work, but he didn't mention anything about wongo berries, so I guess that these claims that these people are making about wongo berries must be true. So you see what I mean? It's the process that's important, not the specific issue at hand. It's learning how to think critically and adapt those skills to whatever comes along. They're the skills that we're trying to impart in this show. So when you hear claims about wongo berries, the first question you'll ask is, well, how plausible are these claims? What evidence is there that wongo berries do what they say they do? Is it just anecdotes? Just testimonials put out by the company that's selling the wongo berries? Well, that kind of evidence has no value whatsoever. Anyway, that kind of critical thought process is the one that we're trying to encourage here on Reality Check. because it really is your best form of self-defense against all those crazy claims that people make out there. Now, the second reason that I don't want to tell you what to believe is because that would imply that my word has some kind of authority. And that's absolutely not the purpose of this show, because it's not me, it's not the person saying it that matters. It's the reasoning, the logic, the evidence behind what a person is saying. That's what matters. Because if you regard me as an authority today, well, maybe next week you'll hear another authoritative person saying something different and you'll believe them instead. And they'll be saying, oh, that Tony Pittman doesn't know what he's talking about. Echinacea does actually work, and so does homeopathy, and psychic powers are really cool too. So that's why I really mean that I don't want to tell you what to believe. I don't want you to believe me, just as I don't want you to believe the next guy or girl who comes along. Use critical thinking to think for yourself and assess all the claims you hear, no matter who's saying them. So anyway, I hope I've made that point clear, because sometimes some of the feedback we get here indicates that some listeners don't really understand that point. All we're trying to do is to help people to learn to be skeptical, so they'll have the tools they need to assess all the weird and wacko stories they hear out there in the world. That's our primary purpose here at Reality Check, and I'm pretty sure it's the primary purpose of all the other skeptical radio shows and podcasts and skeptical organizations out there. All right, enough of that. Now, dear listener, today is a very special day here on Reality Check, because today we're going to introduce a new semi-regular segment of the show, and that is interviews with famous celebrities from around the world. And today, for our very first celebrity interview, we're going to be talking to the Premier of Queensland, Anna Bligh. Now, the tropical state of Queensland is well known for its many quaint local traditions, such as banning all nude beaches, resisting advances in LGBT rights, and a number of high-profile Aboriginal deaths in custody cases. And continuing with this fine tradition of redneckery and backwardness, the Queensland government announced a couple of weeks ago that it's about to give the Queensland Police sweeping new powers to issue on-the-spot fines of between $100 and $300 for swearing. Yes, dear listener, for bad language. Apparently, Queensland Police don't have a specific list of banned words, so it will be up to the judgment of the individual police officer to determine the type of language that's appropriate in the context. Now, unsurprisingly, these new police powers have come under some criticism from a number of quarters. For example, the president of the Queensland Council of Civil Liberties, Michael Cope, expressed his concern about the extent of these new powers. He said, and I quote, "This will become the thing police just slap on someone whenever they aren't happy. No one will fight them, and ultimately people who are homeless or young will bear the brunt of this." Well, yes, most likely, and probably quite a few Aboriginal people too, one suspects. Anyway, to find out more about this pressing issue, our Reality Check correspondent, Barry in Brisbane, is speaking now live with the Premier of Queensland herself, Anna Bligh. Over to you, Barry. Joining me now in the Reality Check Brisbane studio is the Premier of Queensland herself, Anna Bligh. Oh, thank you so much for joining us on Reality Check today, Premier. It really is an honour to have you on the show.
Yeah, no worries, mate.
Now, Premier, if I could just start by asking you about these new police powers to crack down on naughty words. Now, what was the impetus that drove you to take this important action? Well, Barry, I think your listeners have got to understand this. We in Queensland are decent people, and we do not tolerate any of that potty-mouthed language that they seem to like to use so much in other states.
Well, indeed, why should you have to put up with that?
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, as for the particular incident that led to the introduction of these new powers, well, you see, it was like this. I was standing outside the Parliament House, right, a couple of weeks ago, you know, having a fag, you know, smoko time, and, well, because, of course, you know, the little pricks don't let us smoke inside the building anymore, you know, make us go outside and stand on the f***ing footpath. So, anyway, I was just standing there, minding my own business, and, well, this young man comes along, right, walking past me on the footpath. And, you know, I reckon he wasn't from around these parts, probably from one of the southern states, I'd say, because he obviously wasn't looking out for the banana peels on the ground, right, because we've got a shitload of fucking bananas here in Queensland. Anyway, he didn't see the banana peel on the footpath, and he placed his foot straight onto it. And he went ass over tit, wham, flat on his back. F***ing hilarious to see. But Barry, I'll tell you what was not f***ing hilarious was the word that he used when he hit the ground. Now, Barry, of course, being a lady as I am, I'm not going to repeat that word on the air, you understand. But, well, what can I say? It certainly caused my ears to ring and my cheeks to redden, I can tell you that.
Oh, oh, Premier, you poor thing. Oh, you must have been traumatised. Now, look, I know this is hard for you to dig up these painful memories, but can you give us a clue about the particular word he used?
Oh, fuck, look, this is not easy for me, okay? Well, how can I put this politely? Look, he used the D word, basically.
No, the D word? Oh, oh, Premier, you poor thing. You poor, poor baby. No. Nobody should have to hear that word. The D word. The D word. Yeah, D. Oh, look, Premier. Again, look, I know this is hard for you, but just for the benefit of the listeners, can I ask which particular D word it was? Like, dropkick? Or dickhead? Oh, damnation?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ, do I have to fucking spell it out for you, you fucking little prick?
Well, Premier, actually that would be helpful, yeah.
Oh, fuck. Look, this is not easy for me, okay? But, okay, it's the one that starts with D and ends with A-R-N. I-T. A-L-L.
Oh, hang on. Let me just write that down.
Oh. Oh, no. Premier. No, Premier. No, that's just rude. No, that's so uncalled for.
No. Oh, Premier. No, I can understand that you must have been very, very upset.
A f***ing oath, mate. I was really f***ing upset. I said, no, this is Queensland. We have to put our foot down. We have standards of decency in this f***ing state, and I will not f***ing stand for this. So, you know what I did? I walked straight back into the bloody Parliament House, and I f***ing signed an executive order to crack down on this epidemic of foul mouthery.
Oh, oh, Anna, you did the right thing there, I can tell you. No, it's admirable, Anna. Look, let me say this. You, Anna, have truly been a pillar of strength and courage for the community in the face of this terrible adversity. Now, Anna, just one more thing. And I don't really know how to broach this, but, well, you know, as a journalist, I am obliged to raise the subject. And that is that some commentators out there, silly ones, well, some of them have, well, they've criticised these new powers. And, you know, they say that this violates freedom of speech.
Well, f*** me, Jesus. They've been saying that, have they?
Who the f*** said that in particular, huh?
Who was a f***ing little cunt who criticised my new law, huh? Yeah, I bet it was one of them f***ing lacy-drawed, limp-wristed, latte-sipping Nancy boys from one of the southern states, right? Yeah, well, you bring him here and I'll f***ing show him freedom of speech Queensland style. Yeah, let's see how much the little cunt loves his freedom of speech when he's wearing concrete boots and feeding the fish at the bottom of Moreton Bay, hey?
Oh, well, and that'll certainly teach him a lesson.
You see, Barry, the thing that people have got to understand is this. Here in Queensland, we're not so big into protecting all that Nancy boy freedom of speech shit, right? We're more into protecting the freedom of police, right? I mean, think about it. The f***ing coppers have got to have their freedoms too, right? I mean, if we didn't make it a crime to use naughty words, well, we'd be restricting the basic rights and freedoms of the police to f***ing arrest people, wouldn't we? Logical, isn't it? And we don't want that. Do we? Huh? Something those f***ing southern cunts never seem to understand.
Oh, Anna, so true, so true. The power of your logic, Premier, is just irrefutable. But unfortunately, we're out of time, so we'll have to leave it there today. Anna Bligh, Premier of Queensland, thank you so much for joining us here on Reality Check today.
Yeah, no f***ing worries, mate.
And I'll hand it back to you, Tony, in the Reality Check studios in Melbourne.
Well, thank you very much for that, Barry, and special thanks to Anna Bligh. She's a good sport for doing that, isn't she? Now, before we play a song, if you have any questions or comments about something we've covered on the show today, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. You can also visit our webpage too if you like. That's realitycheckonline.net. Okay, let's listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review. And just in case you've been umming and ahhing about whether humans should spend a lot of money and resources in an effort to get to Mars, well, maybe this song will help to convince you.
Mars is the next logical step in our space program. It's the challenge that's been staring us in the face for the past 30 years. It has water, it has carbon, it has a 24-hour day, it has geothermal energy. Mars is a place we can settle.
There is a giant rift in its surface. 5,000 kilometers long, there is a volcano as wide as Arizona.
So there's the choice in life. One either grows or one decays. Grow or die. I think we should grow.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10. Either muster the courage to go, or we risk the possibility of stagnation, cosmic radiation, zero gravity, Martian dust storms, back contamination. But these are dragons that we can take on.
In our time, we have sifted the sands of Mars, established a presence there,
that fulfilled a century of dreams.
The Mars rovers have really captured our imaginations. They genuinely are explorers in the old-fashioned sense.
If you put out a call for volunteers for the first crew to Mars, they'd be lined up coast to coast.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10.
Mars is a dry, frozen version of our home, covered in red dust and sand.
At one time, in the ancient past, Mars was very similar to the condition of earlier.
There will always be people with new ideas on how humans should live together.
We now have eyes and ears on the surface.
What's left after you go is the good you left behind. You have to believe in hope. You have to believe in the future. There are more and more people coming around to the point of view that a positive future for humanity requires human expansion to space.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It has canyons, river valleys, and giant ice sheets.
Mars is a world of wonders.
It shouldn't be humans to Mars in 50 years. It should be humans to Mars in 10.
This is a world of wonders.
We're at a crossroads today. We either muster the courage to go or we risk the possibility of stagnation and decay.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9, also streaming live at joy.org.au, and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. The song you just heard there was The Case for Mars by John Boswell from the Symphony of Science website. And that song featured the voices of Robert Zubrin, Carl Sagan, Brian Cox, and Penelope Boston. Robert Zubrin actually wrote a book called The Case for Mars and is one of the strongest advocates in the world for manned Mars exploration. And if you liked that song and want to hear more similar creations, go to the symphonyofscience.com website. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movie up for review this evening is a new Australian film, a gritty crime drama set right here in Melbourne, Animal Kingdom. Now, this movie has only been out a couple of weeks, and it's been getting a lot of acclaim from critics, and is also going really well at the box office, I'm pleased to say. It won the World Cinema Dramatic Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival this year and currently has a 100% rating on the Rotten Tomatoes website. So a lot of love out there for this movie. I see it has a release in the United States scheduled for August, so I'll be interested to see how it goes over there. I suspect it will do pretty well. Animal Kingdom is very loosely based on the infamous Walsh Street killings that took place in South Yarra in Melbourne in 1988. The main protagonist of the film is 17-year-old Josh Cody. His mother dies at the beginning of the movie, and the only place he can go to live is with his grandma, Smurf Cody, brilliantly played by Jackie Weaver. Smurf's three sons, Josh's uncles, are all involved in the family business of bank robbery and drug dealing. And so the young Josh starts to inevitably get drawn into their dangerous world of crime. Things are a little bit complicated though, because the family is under constant surveillance by the police. And then everything starts to really spiral out of control when a group of renegade detectives decides to go outside the law and pop off members of the Cody gang with complete impunity. Josh is then taken into custody by a homicide detective, Nathan Leckie, played by Guy Pearce, who puts pressure on him to testify against the rest of the family. Josh then has to learn very quickly to survive by playing a deadly game of cat and mouse between his duplicitous family and the equally untrustworthy police, as those around him get killed off one by one. Now, the first thing I want to say about Animal Kingdom is that it's so refreshing to finally watch a movie that treats you as an intelligent viewer, able to join the dots and come to your own conclusions, rather than be spoon-fed everything you need to know. I really enjoyed this film, largely for that reason. The director does a really good job at telling a story without over-explaining everything. Simple things like gestures the characters make or things that they don't do or don't say tell you everything you need to know about what's happening, with no need for heavy plot exposition. Even from the very opening scene and the opening credits, it becomes very obvious that you're in the hands of a smart and skillful filmmaker. And interestingly, this is actually the first feature film made by this director, David Michaud. If this film is anything to go by, I can't wait to see what he does in the future. As well as being intelligently made, the other satisfying element of this movie is the performances. They're all really, really good. Jackie Weaver as the matriarch is quite mesmerizing to watch. Guy Pearce is great as well, as are all the other actors, including first-time actor James Freshville, who plays the young Josh. But I think it's Ben Mendelsohn who plays the older brother, Pope Cody, who really shines through. He plays one of the most unlikable, repellent, and menacing characters that I've seen on the screen for some time. His presence in a scene is enough to put all the other family members on edge, as well as the entire cinema audience. And that's the other thing I should mention about this movie. It's relentlessly tense almost the whole way through. And it has quite a few nasty jump-out-of-your-seat surprises as well, so not one for the faint-hearted. Perhaps the only aspect of the movie that I think didn't really work was the over-stylization in some of the shots. The movie uses slow-motion montages at several points to advance the story in certain places. And a couple of these are quite clever, but I think the director ends up using them too much, and sometimes with the effect of dispelling the emotion in a really dramatic or tense scene. But as this is David Michaud's first film, I think we can forgive him for these over-stylistic flourishes, which really don't detract too much from a very well-crafted movie. So overall, I would say definitely if you get the chance, go out and see Animal Kingdom. It's a smart film, and I think it will end up being a landmark film in the history of Australian cinema. And it's also one that stays with you for quite some time after you see it. I found myself thinking about certain scenes again and again over the next few days after I saw it. So, a great achievement for a first-time director, and one definitely well worth checking out. And that brings us to the end of the 41st episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for episode 42. Coming up next, Cade presents An Awkward Pause. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.